Now.
Good.
I am archiving now. So I missed how many intros?
Just Cheryl and Alice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You want to do it again?
Sure.
It is our 50th show. We should do it.
Well, Bob, right. Do the intro for the 50th.
All right. Listening to Seedlings at Bit by Bit. This is our 50th show. I cannot believe it. I'm Bob Sprankle down here in South Berwick, Maine, with my two great friends, Alice Barr and Cheryl Oakes, and I'll send it right up to Cheryl Oakes.
And thanks to Bob for noticing that this was our 50th show, and I can't believe it either. But we have a great show lined up for you tonight. I'm going to send it north and east of Wells to Kennebunkport. Go ahead, Alice.
Hi, everybody. This is Alice Barr, and I can't believe it's 50 shows either. It's amazing. Time has just flown. It's awesome. And I'm very excited to be a part of this. It's always it's so much fun.
It's not even like work.
No. And I always learn something on every show. That's my favorite part.
And we hope you do, too.
Yes. And tonight we are dissecting the Horizon Report 2009. And I just have to say a shout out to Dave Saltmarsh, who's the tech coordinator in North Berwick. He and I were talking about our tech plans and getting things ready for budget season. And I asked him how his tech plan was, and he said, great. And I said, well, have you seen the new Horizon Report? He goes, yeah, I have it right on my desktop. And I said, oh. So I said, you just opened it up in the past couple of days? He goes, oh, let me check. I have 2008. There's a new one? So for all of you who, like me, was so excited this week to open up Google and find that there's a new Horizon Report, we hope you're here to listen up about that.
Alice, I'm just going to put the link in the chat room here. I'm just to the Horizon Report, because what's great about it is that you can download it and read it on your computer, or should you be a paper person, you can always print it out, or just digest parts of it. So it's really there we go.
And just so you all know, the report is a Creative Commons license, and it is available for all of us to copy and reproduce and send it on to other people.
And I think this is a great tool for schools to sort of, if you're, Cheryl and I both have tech plans due coming up, and I think I'm going to use a lot of content from this.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Bob.
It's like an old friend. I mean, this is probably the fourth year I've sat down with it, and it's great. I mean, because it just keeps bringing back where we've come from and where we're going, and the same things keep popping up, so it's kind of hard to avoid. Maybe we should get into that. What's the big thing this year? Same as last year, right?
Right.
Cell phones. Hard to ignore.
In the Horizon Report, they refer to this as mobiles or mobiles.
They had a great quote in there, or maybe that was another book that I'm reading. how you really can't not have phones in your school at this point. I'm looking for that.
Is that in the mobile section?
It might be an entirely different book.
Oh.
It all starts to blend.
Or you've been listening to Liz talk about cell phones in school.
I was just saying, thinking about that. Liz Kolb has a great book out with ISTE. Peggy has a question in the chat room, and she said, is this only for higher education. And while the Horizon Report is really geared to post-secondary, this one, if we're not preparing our students for post-secondary, then our students won't be ready. So I like to use this as the vision. And as some of us know, the secondary, post-secondary environments are really not maybe promoting as much as K-12 education is.
I think they address a lot more parts of the preparing kids to go to university, and they address how K-12 in many instances is ahead of the university.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I have to find where that is, but that was something that really stood out for me. Let's see. In fact, here it is. 2000, they talk about sector-based editions are planned as well, with the first of these being the K-12 edition planned for release in March 2009. And the reason for this is because they saw that K-12 schools were moving ahead in the areas of communication and collaboration, which I thought was really, really interesting that the schools, the K-12 schools, are moving ahead of the university in some of these areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also, if you've never looked at it, they kind of break it into things that are soon on the horizon, and how far out do they go? 5 years?
Right.
Yeah. 5 years, yeah.
So I think the things that are geared mostly for the next year, I mean, really apply to us down at the K-12 for sure. But again, it's just good practice to see, well, where are we heading, especially like you were just saying, using this for your tech plans. Where do we want to put all this money in? This is the great predictor, or one of them, I would say. And Michael, I just saw I had a great question in there about the mobiles. If the president of the United States has a BlackBerry, what message do we send to students by banning phones in schools?
That's right. He is so right.
Yeah.
And I think when you talk about making cell phones available and getting the regular people to understand how interactive cell phones can be, the sports in the U.S., the football, has a show on like Ness and Sports where on a Sunday afternoon they talk about the favorite coach or favorite team or favorite player, and you're encouraged to text in or call in with your cell phone, and they take a survey right there with all the people who are viewing at that moment. So if our TVs and sports can do it, Is that our hook to start doing that same kind of thing in our schools?
And on the other side of that, guest 478, mm-hmm. who I think I know who that is, said there's no mobile version of the Horizon Report. How foolish is that? And I was just thinking this last night because I was going to put it on my iPhone. I've done mm-hmm. that before, but then I have to put it in PDF form, which is like impossible to read on an iPhone because you got to kind of pinch it to make it larger. So yeah, there's got to be at least a text version.
I'm trying to defend it though.
What's that?
I'm trying to defend it to guest 476, but I'm not doing a very good job.
Yeah, right. He's agreeing. So if it was a text version, then I could mm-hmm. easily use my handy-dandy tool that I love, which is Read Later. Do you have that, Alice, for your phone?
I do.
Yeah. Then you just click that, and it goes into a better format than the web page would be if you were reading off your phone. Very nice. Very nice and handy. So we'll have to send that on to them.
Hmm. So how should we do this? Should we just go down the top six things that they've outlined?
Sure.
I thought it was interesting. I think one of the quotes that I wrote down was in by 2020, which seems like 100 years from now. But I thought they were saying, yes, most people across the world will use a mobile device as their primary internet connection. And I have a text-to-self connection about that. A student in our junior high school, we have one-to-one for 7th and 8th graders, and she didn't have her laptop that day. So we were doing a Ning activity, and all the students were working on their site, and they were answering a prompt that the language arts teachers had given them. And she said, well, I can go get my iTouch. And so I watched her as she used her thumbs to text a paragraph as a prompt. And, you know, I said, I just want to watch you do this. I want to see how fast you are. And she was as quick as other kids were typing on a keyboard. So in 2020, I think that that may happen probably by 2015.
Yeah, and hopefully keyboards will be a thing of the past by that point as well. Because I will never be able to type on my phone as fast as I can with a keyboard. But and when we say mobile, are we also talking about netbooks or just phones?
Well, go ahead, Alice.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that's a good question.
I think the report refers, you know, when they talk about mobiles and, you know, they're really looking at the iPhone and the iPhone apps or widgets. So I think it's really like, you know, that that understanding that people have about the iPhone. But in terms of, you know, what's available right now, I think it's the notebook, netbook, thin client, however you want to call them.
Well, they mentioned specifically the ability to run third-party applications.
Mm-hmm.
So, any tool that can be easily adapted to a host of tasks for learning, productivity, and social networking.
Mm-hmm.
I would say a netbook would count.
Yes. Yep. And I think if we look at the next part of what's, you know, going to, what their vision is for the first year out, is the cloud computing makes the netbook, notebook, iPhone, smartphones the computer of choice.
Yeah,
we kind of have a perfect storm for that to take over. And that's the economy. And, you know, everything's in place. I mean, we've had Google. People are used to putting their docs online. And now everybody's trying to get these small little devices. And it's kind of like instead of all the power that we used to seek with RAM and hard drive space, it's kind of turning around where people want less or will have to go with less. So I think that's where, you know, we're really going to see a lot more in the next year.
And Peggy just asked if we can reference the page number. For me, Peggy, I'm on the backside of page 3, just looking at the executive summary. But if you want that 2020 quote, I'll have to dig through and see where that was in my notes, okay? Maureen's asking, how do we think the global recession will affect the predictions in this report? Great
question. I heard something on NPR today. Let me just see if I can rephrase it. It was something about as America goes it, let's see. As America went into recession, we became much more innovative and nobody was watching the switch. Something like that. Ooh. And what they meant was that there's all this innovation, but that nobody was paying attention to the innovation. And I think what they meant by that is all the stuff that's going on with social networking tools, with collaboration tools, and all these things that are netbooks, all these things are being invented, but we're not paying attention to that because we've been dealing with all the day-to-day stuff, the mortgages, the, you know, jobs, all the stuff that, you know, counts pretty heavily.
Day-to-day.
Right. But that people weren't, like, paying attention to that innovation to be able to solve the problems that we're having now. I thought that was really interesting.
Mike just said the bandwidth will become the new currency, and I think, you know, if Obama's plan of strengthening the infrastructure, I mean that's also perfectly placed at this time, and you know, people aren't going to be buying all this equipment. They're going to want to just tap into that big computing power elsewhere. I think we're seeing that a lot with people spending. I just read something today. I think it was in USA Today. You know, people are spending a lot less to go out for entertainment, and people like Netflix are doing great. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm sure Netflix is, you know, just realizing more and more. Yeah, it's all going to become streamed. You know, they must be making plans to make that, you know, totally ubiquitous. And I also heard the mail might go down to 5 days a week. So, yeah, your Netflix in the mailbox isn't going to be as good anyway. Did you hear that? That they're talking about 5 days a week?
I did, but you know what? Netflix is available streaming over the web, so
everything. That's what I'm saying. They'll push all their media there, and I think you know there's. You know, the big giants that are holding back with certain films, right? They're only releasing certain things. I think they're still testing the water. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just going to drive it more. You know, the economy is going to make everything go more for streaming, which means you're going to need bigger bandwidth. You know, and then you look back a year ago with the writer's strike, which really changed people's attitudes about streaming content. Because they just went elsewhere, and so things are really setting up.
Oh, well, I think Michael's comment about the about bandwidth being the new currency is absolutely correct, because everybody's, you know, right now oil is the currency, I think, but. I think as things get worse and worse here in the oil situation, don't you think more people will probably be able to travel less? And so they will be doing a lot more stuff from home. And until they are able to really figure out this car issue and the gas issue, I don't think, you know, I think things will definitely be bandwidth.
I'm just looking in the chat, and I see Maureen said something about it seems that things that were in beta and free are now for money or gone. And I didn't see the previous part of that conversation, but I have that foreboding feeling every time I go to a new site now. Wondering, is this going to be here next week?
Right.
And, you know, I've just lost some good ones, you know, that are like gone, you know, nobody bought them. And it was like, wow, that tool was so great. It's definitely.
Well, it's a little bit like that, the boom a few years ago. And I guess certain things rise to the top, but I'm nervous about things like Delicious Bookmarks and Digo, because it's, you know, all your stuff is stored there. That's the only worry I have now.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the hardest thing is when it goes to a fee-based model. I know with Sprout Builder, which I really enjoyed, you know, mm-hmm. that site making widgets, and I didn't have any warning. Maybe other people did. But, you know, they went to a paid model. I think it starts this next month. And I have all this work, you know, already up there posted in my school site. I had to go and change it all over. So it is, you know, you kind of tread carefully. Mike says export, export, export.
Yes, thankfully I've done that with my 4,000 bookmarks or whatever. Gosh.
I want to go to page 5 before we, you know, move on to the next section. But the key trends that they were talking about, and key trends I think we know because that's really what we're, the whole report is about. But the critical challenges on page 6, what would be page 6, I just love this comment that students are different, but a lot of educational material is not. Mm. And I thought, you know, that's just so explicit when talking to people that, you know, what are we doing in our classrooms? How are we making this for our students and making it different for our students who are different?
Well, and I like that it speaks to assessment as well.
Yes.
Assessment, likewise, has not kept pace with new modes of working and must change along with teaching methods, tools, and materials. That's huge. That's sort of like always been the elephant in the room kind of thing. And people don't want to talk about changing their assignments so that they can be assessed differently. Mm-hmm. That's a great little paragraph.
And the other one that I liked was looking at the significant shifts in the way scholarship and research are conducted, that it really needs to be innovative, and that, you know, this really speaks to the post-secondary, that, you know, they're not making enough changes there. I know my son was doing a graduate project, and he was having to, you know, read the journals and, you know, make all kinds of comments and synthesize the material. And I said, but that's not probably your most current material. You need to go out into the databases and you need to go out and look at blog posts and people who are doing that research. And the colleges haven't made that shift yet. They're still in that old, comfortable, this is what I know, this is what I can relate to. And it's so old by the time it's published in a journal, relatively speaking.
Before we move on from assessment, and while we're talking about change, right on the whitehouse.gov site, you go into the K-12 education plan, and I love the quote there. It says, Obama and Biden believe teachers should not be forced to spend the academic year preparing students to fill in bubbles on standardized tests.
Mm. Woo-hoo!
It's right there on the page. I love it. They will improve the assessments used to track student progress to measure readiness for college and the workplace and improve student learning in a timely, individualized manner. I love it. I mean, it's right on the site. It's, you know, it's just great.
Wow. There's also that piece that says we're expected, especially in public education, to measure and improve through formal assessment that our students are learning. Data collection and mining of student information systems for such evidence is being considered as a component of accreditation, and institutions increasingly are expected to collect, manage, sort, and retrieve an expanding mountain of data related to not only learning, but the entire spectrum of their activities. Current systems are not capable of managing and interpreting real-time information flows on the scale that is anticipated.
Did you say what page you were on with that, Alex?
I'm sorry, page 6, and okay. It's the fourth bullet.
Yep. Yep.
Very interesting.
It's so true. I hope it's not going to put us in the mindset of, yeah, let's collect more data. You know, I mean, I think they're saying, you know, let's get the important stuff that's happening. And, you know, the first thing I thought when I read that is, yeah, we need these continuums of learning that can be housed online in a digital portfolio or something like that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to scoot out and find the link for this, but Melinda Miller, whom we had on the show last week, got her assessment wall videoed and posted on her blog, and it's just really telling how a principal in a school has taken data and put it in a visual process. So I'm going to go get that, because I think, Alice, it really speaks to your data collection and making giving purpose to that data. So I'm going to go grab that so everybody can see it.
Okay, you want to hear something funny?
Yes.
Girls, daddy's home. Oh, darn. They didn't
get loud. I was trying to cue dogs. Everybody. Cue the dogs.
Darn. Well, can you hear Lily?
Yeah, I hear her. How about cloud computing? Anything else we want to say before we head into the 2-year-out plan?
Oh, yeah. I would just... Go ahead, Alice.
No, I just said to the clouds. So we head to the clouds.
I just want to say that if I talk with students at the high school, and Alice, I think you might speak to this too, most of them are emailing their work back and forth, or they keep their work in an email format. They haven't gotten to the Google Docs state or Zoho or anything like that. And I think if we make a concerted effort to show them about cloud computing and, you know, making that digital repository for themselves, that they will be able to make that transformation that we as adults haven't made yet, that they'll be able to collaborate more easily and not use up our server space.
Yes, definitely. But I think that part of that comes from the habit of passing in a paper to the teacher. Mm-hmm. And so the old habits die hard. I think until teachers have an understanding of the organization of cloud computing, kids won't see the value. And yeah, I don't want to go into the negatives, but you know, I think it's a better way to do it.
Right. And Maureen's asking if we have any concerns about data mining, privacy, and access. Yeah, but I think the benefits far outweigh the concerns that I have right now.
And I think, Maureen, you raise a really good question. I think also we have to think about part of all of this is the whole piece of digital citizenship. How much are you putting out there? If it's, you know, clearly if it's an essay about Lord of the Flies, it you know, that's okay kind of thing. But you're not, you don't want to be putting up all your passwords, for example. And that's part of the education piece we need to do.
And more tech savvy girl said, you know, the under 13 limitations are stifling that. And the way I get around that is I use the user plus student1 at gmail.com and keep all of the mail coming into a designated account.
Yeah, that's a great way to do it, Cheryl, I think, for now.
Okay, Bob, I'm ready to move.
Oh, I was just going to say one more thing about clouding.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I think 90% of what I do now is all what I would consider cloud computing. I don't really ever work in Microsoft Word or even Open Office at this point. I do everything online and sync it seamlessly. And, you know, I've been a big user of Google Docs, but now I love Evernote. I really do, because I think Google Apps is a great idea. I just don't trust having all that dependent upon a browser, and the cache and all the demands that that has. So I've been using Evernote. And, you know, maybe that's a way to approach the teachers, especially those that have lost everything because they didn't back up. you know, it's one way to show this is safe. But, yeah, like Maureen said, you know, you can't write a student evaluation and put it on, or at least I wouldn't put it online. No. You know, that's got to be locked down, I think. Mm-hmm. All right, go ahead. Let's go on to the 2 years
Mike
out.
Mike has a question.
Oh, yeah. Have any of you heard of the VoiceThread latest change in policy?
No.
No?
Michael, enlighten us. We're going to have to wait 30 seconds for him to get that.
Well, we'll geo while he's doing that.
Yes. Yes. Next.
Geo everything. That's a term I haven't heard. Is that, am I out of it?
No.
I mean, I know what it means. You know, everything's going that way. But I do feel a little out of it because I have the first version of the iPhone, so I don't really have true geo on it.
Well, I think what this is speaking to is the fact that these applications and mashups and all these kinds of things, you know, that people have on their iPhone, it always broadcasts their location, that kind of thing, that you're going to be doing more and more things with geotagging, finding your way more and more places. And I think that starts with your Magellan or your, what do you call yours, Bob?
Maggie.
Your Maggie, right. on your dashboard, I mean, it's smart enough to tell you how to get from point A to point B.
Well, I get that. But am I missing? I mean, I didn't get real excited when I saw that for the 2 years out, and I might just be missing it. I see it as a nice, fun thing to do. You know, when I look at Apple's latest iLife and it can geotag all your photos, I think that's cool. Of course, I never go anywhere, so you know. But, you know, am I missing it here? How is that really going to come into our schools?
Oh, into our schools. That's an interesting question.
I mean, I think it's something that we got to definitely pay attention to, but I don't think I get it yet.
Mm-hmm. And that was page 15, right? Geo.
Yeah, 15.
Geo everything.
Yep.
My pages are all messed up. But when I looked at the uses that are out there already, I know that helped me understand it a little better.
Right, but those are great examples, for sure.
Yeah, I've lost that page.
Well, they talk about context-aware information, points of interest, historical sites. So, for example, when you're on a field trip, that might be a way to tie in social networking, your phone. You might be able to say to, like, point at a, let's say you're in Boston, you point at the graveyard and boom, up comes the whole thing. Mm-hmm. It tells you all about some of the headstones in there, something like that.
And I think the geo everything really gets at the collaborative nature of where we're going with cloud computing and all the mobiles. And I think it is hard to wrap our brains around that because we've so long been focused on our classroom and four walls, and this just opens everything up.
Yeah, they have a little section in here about virtual geocaching, the practice of placing media in an online Dropbox and tagging it. So it enhances scavenger hunts, reality games, and other forms of urban outdoor recreation, which you're saying, Bob, doesn't really apply to school yet.
Well, no, I'm sure it does. I just don't totally see it yet. And, you know, the thing I do like is, yeah, it's once again saying everything's going to be tagged, you know. And I kind of understand, like, I'll be walking down the street with a smart phone, and it'll start tagging or communicating with other tags, which kind of, you know, sounds freaky too, but I see that that's some power.
There's some great links in this section for further reading that will be interesting to explore, I think.
Right. I think the two things that I saw, the reference to medicine and how they've used that GPS tablet to allow learners who are spatially challenged to experience transparent reality visualizations of using machine and machine controls rather than a mouse for doing whatever it is, you know, if it's the x-ray machine or even an operation. So I think those are the kinds of uses that we'll see the most transformation. And I think in the education part, we're going to really see this take off with individual users. But I don't think we're going to see the teachers and students designing things in school. I think it's really going to be outside of the school and in that collaborative nature. All right. Are we still on... we just moved to 2 to 3 years out, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yep.
Personal web.
Yes.
Who would like to explain that?
Well, is the personal web in the two... I thought personal web was out 4 to 5 years.
No,
two to three.
Oh, right.
Page 19.
Yes.
Well, I think that's... I'm surprised it's 2 to 3 years, to be honest. I think it's like pretty rampant right now. How much more stuff are we going to add to this personal web? I don't know. But maybe they're saying it will be the norm in 2 to 3 years. But don't you think most kids have some kind of online presence or personal interaction with the personal web at this point?
Well, I think there must be a difference between the personal web and the social networking web.
They're saying blogging, edublogs, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and Flickr. I don't know. Tools like Delicious. I mean, how long have... I don't know.
Well, I don't think it's collaborative, which they do reference here. And tagging. I don't think that teachers understand tagging well enough to explain it to their students to make them more efficient at organizing things.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree, Alice. Is it 2 to 3 years out? No, it's not. I mean, maybe for higher education, but not for K-12.
True. I was thinking K-12. Very true. And this is probably exactly what they refer to later, is that K-12 has kind of gone ahead in this area.
Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting.
And I mean, I don't think we have a really good vehicle for this yet because, you know, we start... having students create, like I know in my school, in my fifth grade, I have them create a ThinkQuest page. And then in eighth grade, I have them working in a Ning. I don't have them working consistently in one thing and documenting their work or leaving their work there. And I'm hoping when we get Google Apps for Education running that we'll be able to offer all of these tools to our students, and they'll pick the best and put it on their Google site that they will keep forever.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm hoping. But
well, and I think, Bob, you brought up tagging. I think that the whole notion of tagging and organizing is a huge piece that's missing. The whole realization of what tagging can do to pull out information for you is a big missing piece that we need to work on in schools, that understanding of what tagging is. Mm-hmm. We should zip on to 4 and 5 because it's already 10 after.
Yeah. All right. I can't remember who asked, were we going to speak to Maureen, I think, the semantic web. And I will put this link in because as part of the Horizon Report on page 25, there was an introduction to the semantic web on YouTube. And it's a 6-minute video that explains the idea in simple terms, much better than I could ever explain it. So I'm going to go grab that link.
And two people have asked in the chat room tonight if anyone's looked back at the old Horizon boards to see how accurate they were. And if, I admit I have not. Have you guys?
We were just talking about doing that very thing in our tech committee, yeah. Which would be really cool. But I think, you know, I can clearly remember that they've been, I mean, they say it in this report that they've been talking about mobile phones for years now. And, you know, again, looking at how things are getting smaller because of economics and things like that, I think, you know, they're right on. But yeah, mm-hmm. That would be great, you know.
This is year 3, right? The third year they've done this?
Is it only 3? Wow. Feels like or, more.
That's, I don't know, but now I'm going to go look at them all.
Right.
Great blog post, people that asked. John S. and Mike.
Oh. I'm still getting to the semantic to the Google web. YouTube, yes.
So this is the way, I didn't get to read this section. This is one part I still got to finish. Mm-hmm. But as I understand semantic aware apps, it's sort of the beginning of AI, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a good way of saying it, yeah.
I mean, I can only think of the Terminator. Because I'm loving that show. But
yeah.
All right, finally I got it.
I sort of make this makes me think that it's a smarter web. It's a smarter way of interacting with the internet. Yeah, so AI too.
Right, and I really looked at some of the applications of it, which are, you know, in the medical field and using the semantic web concept to search patient data and improve patient care. And I think computer technology can do that much more quickly than a physician who only sees you, you know, once every 6 months or once every year. So, that's about all. But smart objects.
Yeah, this was cool.
Yes. That's the other one in the 4 to 5 year timeline. Alice, you want to say anything about smart objects first?
Well, it's a little sort of daunting, these smart objects. Mm-hmm. I remember a couple years ago when Bluetooth first came out, how they talked about your refrigerator's going to be able to tell you what's inside of it. Mm-hmm. And you could wirelessly set your stove. None of that's happened yet, but Bluetooth definitely works, like with cell phones and stuff. But I guess this is sort of that concept on steroids, kind of, mm-hmm. that an object will tell you where it is, who made it, how it was made, and so forth, who the owner is. So I'm not really sure how I would equate that back to like our lives, our K-12 lives, I guess. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But their example of healthcare, I think, is kind of neat because the simulations are much richer, and they use virtual world, Second Life, and things as ways for teaching and learning, which is kind of neat.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would want a smart object in my classroom to, you know, work with a student if they were still using a keyboard or a pencil or a crayon to shape their learning. I mean, that would be a smart object application mm-hmm. for education.
Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, I'm also thinking of this as a smart object. Like, you know, you take something like your GPS, you know, and it's already doing something great, you know, where it's helping you find your way, but it can also turn around and send information back. I mean, that's where they're heading soon, where enough GPSs flowing down I-95 are going to be able to report back how the traffic is uh-huh. without people being there. And so if you think about education, and I mean, I don't know what this would manifest in, but you think about all these pieces or people that have contact with that one student and how much information doesn't get transmitted, you know, maybe that's how it would apply to education. Just communicating to all channels, you know, so you could tap in and say, oh, okay, here's what, you know, like I'm, let's say I'm giving some type of assessment in my class, you know, and the information from another class's assessment can help me individualize that for this student. You know, maybe I find out that mm-hmm. they're, you know, challenged with certain language aspects. So, you know, automatically on the fly, the assessment would, you know, tap into something that they're able to do. I don't know. I'm just kind of thinking.
Well, and I think Mike has a good example in the chat room. Scan your ID card in the library and have a personalized reading list appear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's almost taking some of the social networking tools, I think, of library thing,
right.
and then building them into things that we already have. So taking that, it's that sharing of information on a much bigger scale.
I keep thinking of photosynth, even though I know that's not really yes. what we're talking about. But when you look at those, you know, out of the many, you get this clearer picture. And
that's
in a
exactly
way, those,
what I thought of.
In a way, those photographs are interrelating where before they used to be isolated from each other.
Yep, that's exactly what I... It's like the greater, the more is better than one. Or that they all support each other, kind of.
John S. says we have that at Amazon.com, that ability to, you know, put an interest in and get a book list. You're right. And isn't that Shelfari and something else?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I made a Wordle today after I read the Horizon report, and I posted it in the gallery at wordle.net, so, and I tagged it with Horizon Report 2009. So if anyone else makes a Wordle after listening to this or reading the report, it would be good to kind of plaster Wordle with that. And of course I can't find the link to it, but that doesn't matter. You can search. I tagged it.
Go in the show notes.
Yes, we'll have that.
You know, I'm just thinking about that Amazon thing too, and I guess mm-hmm. I'm not thinking about smart objects, but I'm thinking about what's missing from, you know, the smart recommendations that we have already. There's still this wall separating us from other people when you go to a site like Amazon, mm-hmm. which is kind of amazing this far down the line. You know, you can go there and get all these resources from other people, but we're missing out on the fact that you might be there at the exact same time that a group of
yes.
people are there searching for the same things. And, you know, I know there are like kind of sites coming up that says you probably have these interests with the, you know, Facebook is like that. You probably have these interests with these people because mm-hmm. you've been searching for this, but there still is this wall that I think we got to blast through.
Well, I think that's one of the examples from the smart objects or the semantic web, where they have on a college campus. Oh, link friends. It's on page 25. The University of Mary Washington. It has, as well as their blogging platform, it's experimenting with a semantic portal as a way to organize and find content, explore the community, and find people. So that's really, you know, take a large university and turn it into those small personal learning networks. They're trying it. Anything else we want to say about the report that was our favorite part or got us thinking? Or
I did want to mention one last thing that was a favorite quote. And I saw someone tweet about this the other day, too. Just in the key trends when they're talking about visualization tools, you know, they just have a quote, visual literacy must be formally taught, even though it's an evolving field.
And yes.
I think that's the big part that people really need to hear, is that a lot of this has to be formally taught, and it just isn't. You know, it's so new. And, you know, I've really experienced that this trimester with teaching chat room safety and netiquette. Nobody ever taught us, you know, and watching kids get into these chat rooms and just kind of have at it and make all these mistakes, and then we kind of go through building a rubric to follow. This is an important part of what needs to happen for that ed tech education, whatever, you know, any of this in there. And I think, you know, the tools are coming at us and people are using them and just kind of learning them on the fly. But this formalized, mm-hmm. you know, instruction is what's really going to be great.
Yeah, it was technological literacy, visual literacy, and something else.
Information literacy.
Thank you.
Which is something we really, really need to get cracking on.
And I want to give a shout out to Vicki Davis, who is on the board of directors for this group. And equally as interesting as the vision they post, their method of going about this is very, very systematic. They have one half of their 30 to 40 members are newly chosen each year. So, I mean, they're constantly looking for people who are cutting edge to be part of this process. Mm-hmm. So,
you probably have seen Lucy Gray tweeting from, she's down in Dallas now working with, I think, Dallas or Houston. Anyway, working with the advisory board now on next steps, I think.
All right.
So,
wow.
I'm going.
This has been a great conversation for us. And from the feedback we have, it looks like you all in the chat room have enjoyed it, too. And we will enjoy all these links that we can't get to while we're doing the show. But it's that time.
It is. Cue the dogs.
Sorry, they're hanging out with Daddy now.
Aha.
Geek of the week.
Geek of the week.
Yes. Yes.
Who would like to start?
We need a noise for Geek of the Week.
We do. Usually just saying that's enough.
Who's starting?
Go ahead, Alice.
All right. Am I doing that K-12 one?
Yes, please.
Okay. I'm going to need someone else to drag it in the chat room, I think.
Okay, I can take care of that.
So I found in my travels somewhere this week that there is a K-12 portion to the Horizon Report, which is really interesting to me, that they have, as we were saying before, as they've taken this piece, that K-12 is kind of moving a bit faster than secondary in certain areas. And, so this is a wiki space for K-12, And I think...
Did you put it in the notes?
Or yeah, I'll did, but it. Here, I got it now. I
okay.
can drag it.
All right.
There we go. So they're talking specifically on emerging technology for elementary and secondary learning institutions. So there's a place to list, whoops, I just lost the page. There's a place to list organizations that they're working with. There's a report, which I hadn't looked at yet, and then resources. So you know the resources are going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
And this was started in November, so it'll be interesting to kind of see how this goes.
That's excellent.
That is amazing. And they have the links to the other Horizon reports right there, so I can see it goes back to 2004.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
I know that. So, and you'll see down at the bottom, there's a process timeline, and so that's where I think Lucy's part of that
mm-hmm.
group there. So they have, you know, there'll be a K-12 Horizon report, which will be great to sort of compare. So that's great that they saw that need and went ahead and did something about it. So
that's good.
Yeah. So you want me to keep going?
Yeah.
I have your next one queued up.
Okay. Well, I was chatting with Michael Richards, who's in the chat room today,
mm-hmm.
and so he gave me some good ideas. So the next one is Virtual Worlds Expo, and this is a cool link, Michael. This is a 150 youth-oriented virtual worlds. It's like a listing of different virtual worlds that by age group that,
wow.
Kids can go to and, with a link, and there's all kinds of stuff. There's Disney, there's Barbie, there's, you know, you name it, it's in here. You know, we know some of them, Club Penguin. I didn't know about Elf Island,
I didn't know about McDonald's
creatures.
Happy Meal 3.0.
So this is a pretty cool little collection of things here that would be interesting. I don't know. I'm going to look at it with some kids, I think. And then it seems that they have a sort of conference, Virtual World Kids in September. So that might be worth taking a look at. Anybody who's got kids who want to get involved with that.
And is it a virtual conference?
It says at the virtual world. No, it's in Los Angeles.
Okay.
Well, I don't know.
Well, it
they
might
have
be
sort
both.
Of a Second Life-y kind of looking building there, so maybe.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Next one. So you're going to hear
I'm
from me a lot tonight. All right. The next one that I have is... Spelljacks, right? Is that the
oh,
name?
Oh,
Speeder.
No, Spreeder.
Okay, Speeder.
Yeah.
Spreeder.
Spreeder.
Speed Reader.
Okay.
Free Speed Reading Trainer. So this is also, Michael gave me this one. This is kind of cool. I mean, you can put any passage of text in mm-hmm. and speed read it. Remember, did you guys in like fifth or sixth grade have to do that?
Yeah.
Speed Act, speed reading.
The different colors of the cards, right?
Yeah. we read the Pearl in an hour. I vividly remember that.
Wow.
How was that comprehension, Alice? Fluency was great.
All I know is there was a pearl involved in that book. So anyway, that's... People might want to... I have a few kids who might like to use that to improve their reading.
There's an iPhone version of that as well.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. And the last one is Ajax Spell Check. And clearly, if you don't have Firefox, this would be a great use. This would be a great spell checker, something that one of the tech coordinators in our building today pointed out. This would be great for writing comments for report cards, because our report card program, believe it or not, does not have a spell checker.
Mm.
So
ours doesn't either.
So here we go. Here's one built right in. You could put them side by side and off they go. That's my geeks of the weeks.
Great. I'm going to jump in because I kind of stole one from Bob, but we run in the same circles. So
I almost was going to pick that one. Really? So there you go. Yeah. But
I was excited.
Well, we only have time for one more, so that's perfect.
All right. I'm going to talk about thatsnotcool.com. I actually heard about it on the Today Show on the snow day, but I think it's really it's just so timely because they were talking about how parents should be involved with kids, and this is a really cool site to suggest to them, and I'm going to use it with our space kids, our eighth graders who are on the Ning.
Go ahead.
No,
I have the New York Times article. That's where I saw it, so I put that in as well.
Oh, great.
Teaching teenagers about harassment. Mm-hmm. And it is really geared towards the kids, which is, mm-hmm. I like that part,
Yeah.
But there's there's like posters or graphics or something that you'll send to someone. Congratulations, you've just now become a stalker. You've sent with that last text message, you're now stalking. Things like that. So there's a little bit of sarcasm to it, but I think it raises the awareness.
Well, the videos are a hoot.
Oh yeah.
And they're because they don't use any real people. Well, there's one with real people, but sock puppets and fruit. The fruit one is hysterical.
I'm just typing out a message here. I noticed in the Pew Internet Report, they were talking about how, adults can make an impression on students when they're in an online social network and can do a lot of instruction that is accepted by students to make some changes and be more private and more appropriate. So I'm really excited because anytime that I've put any website about cyberbullying or internet safety into the eighth grade R space that we're developing, they take right to it and make comments and start discussions about, things that they've seen and experiences that they've had. So I can't wait to use this one.
Well, that's great. That'll be great.
And Bob, where's the New York Times article, Peggy Wonders?
It will be right in the Geek of the Week links, but I'll drop that in right now, too. Let's see.
There's a video on that New York Times. It's the Ad Council that sponsors this website, but there's an ad in the New York Times article that's very compelling. It's really... You got to watch it. It's very interesting.
That's great.
Yep.
Well, unfortunately, we've come to the end of our hour. And Bob, I think since this is our 50th show, that you want to do the outro as well, because you were so good at that.
I guess I need my mic on, though. I started and nothing was coming out. Well, you've been listening to Seedlings at Bit by Bit, coming to you from edtechtalk.com. We'd like to thank Jeff and Dave for helping us with that. And I can't believe it's 50 shows. When did we start? What year?
2006? I don't know,
2000. We started before the internet. Well, thanks for everybody, really, because that's what it's all about. It's, we love getting together and seeing the chat room and people joining. So thanks so much to everybody coming on board with us and the Ning and everything. It's just been a great journey. So we're on next week. Hopefully we have...
No, we are not. Are we? Wait a minute. The wrong month. Yes, okay, next week we are on. Yeah, but who are we having with us?
Clive? Yeah, Clive. I'm forgetting his last name. Pixton. Pixton. the owner, I think he's the owner of Pixton Comics, and hopefully he's coming on. I haven't heard back from him yet, so Clive, if you're listening, we need confirmation. And if not, we'll figure something out.
Mm-hmm. And then on February 12th, teachers talking are on. So.
Oh, that's fun.
Yep. So, all right. Well, I'm saying goodbye.
I'll say over and out.
And I'll say see you later.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.